All right. Well, it's nice to see you all again. I haven't been here for a few weeks, I guess. So the last time I was here, we finished up chapter 21, and we saw that the Lord visited Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did unto Sarah as he had spoken, and he delivered on his promise.
Yes, sir.
And she conceived and bare Abraham a son in his old age, and his name was called Isaac. And he is the son of promise. He's the promised seed that the Lord promised to Abraham and had been promising for some time. And this son is something that it was a major fulfillment of God's promises to him, that everything that God promised was going to come through this son. Like, this was a major expectation in Abraham's life. It's like everything's been building up to this, and now finally he has this son.
Man.
And we get to chapter 22, and I just want to say this. The front cover of my Bible, it says Holy Bible. Paul calls this the Holy Scriptures. Man. This is a holy book.
Right.
But this chapter, there's something special about it. It's a, like a special sacred chapter that just kind of stands out. And I was thinking about it the last couple days, and if I could only keep like 10 chapters out of the whole Bible, this one might make the list. It's that special. When we were in Genesis chapter 3, it's also a very important chapter. We spent a couple of weeks on it because we looked at it. We actually did the whole chapter twice from two different angles, looking at God's judgment there, his perfect judgment, and also his mercy. And I think we're going to do the same thing with this chapter because it's just so deep and there's so many layers to it that we're not going to be able to do it all in 1 week. So that being said, let's just get started. We're going to just read through the chapter. Then go through it verse by verse. So verse 1, it says, "And it came to pass after these things that God did tempt Abraham and said unto him, Abraham. And he said, Behold, here I am. And he said, Take now thy son, thine only son Isaac, whom thou lovest, and get thee into the land of Moriah and offer him there for a burnt offering upon one of the mountains which I will tell thee of. And Abraham rose up early in the morning and saddled his ass and took two of his young men with him and Isaac his son and clave the wood for the burnt offering and rose up and went unto the place of which God had told him. Then on the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place afar off. And Abraham said unto his young men, Abide ye here with the ass, and I and the lad will go yonder and worship and come again to you. And Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it upon Isaac his son. And he took the fire in his hand and a knife, and they went both of them together. And Isaac spake unto Abraham his father and said, My father. And he said, Here am I, my son. And he said, Behold the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for a burnt offering? And Abraham said, My son, God will provide himself a lamb for a burnt offering. So they went both of them together. And they came to the place which God had told him of, and Abraham built an altar there and laid the wood in order and bound Isaac his son and laid him on the altar upon the wood. And Abraham stretched forth his hand and took the knife to slay his son. And the angel of the Lord called unto him out of heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, Here am I. And he said, Lay not thine hand upon the lad, neither do thou anything unto him. For now I know that thou fearest God, seeing thou hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, from me. And Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him a ram caught in a thicket by his horns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered him up for a burnt offering in the stead of his son. And Abraham called the name of that place Jehovah Jireh, as it is said to this day, in the mount of the Lord it shall be seen. And the angel of the Lord called unto Abraham out of heaven the second time, and said, By myself have I sworn, saith the Lord. For because thou hast done this thing, and hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, that in blessing I will bless thee, and in multiplying I will multiply thy seed as the stars of the heaven, and as the sand which is upon the seashore, and thy seed shall possess the gate of his enemies. And in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, because thou hast obeyed my voice. So Abraham returned unto his young men, and they rose up and went together to Beersheba, and Abraham dwelt at Beersheba. And it came to pass after these things that it was told Abraham, saying, Behold, Milcah, she hath also borne children unto thy brother Nahor, Huz his firstborn, and Buz his brother, and Kemuel, the father of Aram, and Kesed, and Hazo, and Pildash, and Jidlaf, and Bethuel. And Bethuel begat Rebekah. These eight Milcah did bear to Nahor, Abraham's brother. And his concubine, whose name was Reumah, she bare also Teba, and Gaham, and Thahash, and Maacah. All right, let's go back to verse 1, and we'll just go through this verse by verse. So verse 1, it says, It came to pass after these things. This is a really important point. After what things? Well, okay, so in the previous chapter, we looked at how Isaac was born after all this time, the promise finally fulfilled, and we see what happened with Abimelech. I'm not really going to get into it now, but the thing is, chapter 22 happens after a bunch of other things. We just read through most of the life of Abraham already at this point. And the point I want to make is that chapter 22 doesn't happen right away. God doesn't appear to Abram in Ur of the Chaldees and say, Hey, all you got is your wife, but I want you to take her and offer her for a burnt offering. He doesn't do that. This is not something that happens right away. This is something that happens after other things. Right. There's a pattern leading up to this, and God is preparing him throughout these last 7 chapters, 8 chapters, 9 chapters, however many chapters it's been, 10 chapters, since chapter 12. He's been preparing him for this moment. What has he been doing? He's been perfecting Abraham, and he's been perfecting his faith to bring him to this point. It came to pass after these things that God did tempt Abraham. That's interesting. Makes me think of James chapter 1. Let's turn to James chapter 1 and we'll talk about this. God did tempt Abraham. Interesting. James chapter 1. In verse 12, I just want to bring this up because it's something that confuses a lot of people. James 1, verse 12, it says, Blessed is the man that endureth temptation, for when he is tried, he shall receive the crown of life, which the Lord hath promised to them that love him. Well, that's certainly true about what happens with Abraham in this chapter. But verse 13, Let no man say when he is tempted, I am tempted of God. For God cannot be tempted with evil, neither tempteth he any man. Wait a minute. It just said that God doesn't tempt any man. Well, in Genesis 22, it said God did tempt Abraham. Is that a contradiction? No, let's keep reading. Verse 14, But every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. Then when lust hath conceived, it bringeth forth sin. And when sin is finished, it bringeth forth death. Do not err, my beloved brethren. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and cometh down from the Father of lights, with whom is no variableness, neither shadow of turning. Okay, so what I want to say, God did tempt Abraham. Is that true? Yes, it is. Verse 13, Let no man say when he's tempted, I'm tempted of God, for God cannot be tempted with evil, neither tempteth he any man. The context here, he's talking about the temptation of evil, okay? God doesn't tempt any man with evil, okay? What the word tempt means, okay, if you get right into the meaning of the word, it means to feel, to try out, to test, or to attempt to influence, okay? This is a test in Genesis 22, but God is not tempting Abraham to do something evil the way the tempter does. When Satan comes along and he tempts you, it's with evil. He tempts you to do something wrong. God is testing Abraham to see if he'll do what's right. That's the test here. Okay? Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above. You know what? He's the Father of lights. There's no variableness. There's no shadow of turning. God is light, and in him is no darkness at all. God won't tempt you with evil. He doesn't want you to go that way. He's going to tempt you with good. Right. He wants to see if you'll endure that test and do what's right, even if it's going to cost you. So God did tempt Abraham. He said, "Behold, here am I." And he said, "Take now thy son." The first thing I want to point out is that he says, "Take now thy son." This is the father's action. He doesn't wait till Isaac is older and then tell Isaac, "Hey, go offer yourself for a burnt offering." He tells the father, "Take your son." This is the father's action. One special thing that we're going to see about this chapter, we're going to focus on it more next week. But this chapter really gives you insight into the heart of God in the gospel. But we're going to save that for next week. But he says, "Take now thy son, thine only son Isaac." Well, wait a minute. Didn't he have another son, Ishmael? He said in the last chapter, "Cast out this bondwoman and her son." I mean, that's what Sarah said, but God said, "You know what? Obey her voice. Go ahead and do it." Now you got one son. Ishmael was never the plan. He was never in the will of God for Abraham. And so God's like, "No, I want him out of the picture because I want you down to one son. One only begotten son." So that he could say this, "Take now thy son, thine only son Isaac." He's the only one you have. "Whom thou lovest." God, why would you bring up that at a time like this? When you tell Abraham to go offer his son for a burnt offering and then really rub it in. "Oh, your only son, whom thou lovest. I know how much you love him, Abraham. And yet, I want you to go offer him up for a burnt offering." It's amazing the emphasis there. Offer him up for a burnt offering. Well, wait a minute. This is Isaac. He's the son of promise. All the promises that God gave to Abraham, he's going to fulfill through Isaac. But then he tells him, "Go offer him up for a burnt offering?" It just doesn't make any sense. And I'll tell you something about this chapter. It does not make sense to the natural man. This chapter does not make sense to the carnally minded. It does not make sense to remember what Jesus said to Peter. "Thou savorest not the things which be of God, but those that be of men." If you're like that, this chapter won't make any sense to you. You'll have the wrong view of God. You'll have the wrong view of Abraham. You just won't understand what's going on. Yeah, the son of promise. God understood that this son, Isaac, was everything to Abraham. This son was all that he had. This son was the thing that he loved most on this earth. Everything. And what God is saying to him, "Abraham, I want you to give me everything. I want what's most important to you because I am the Lord and I should be what's most important to you. Amen. Are you willing to give it up? The best that you have, everything that you have, the most favorite thing that you have, the thing that you love most, for me, So what's Abraham's response? Verse 3. And Abraham rose up early in the morning and saddled his ass and took two of his young men with him and Isaac his son and clave the wood for the burnt offering and rose up and went unto the place of which God had told him. What's his response? Obedience. Obedience. He doesn't like wait around and think about it. Well, I don't know. Maybe I should. Maybe I shouldn't. Maybe it wouldn't be worth it. He doesn't wait till afternoon. He doesn't wait till evening. He doesn't give himself a chance to talk himself out of it.
Good.
Just right away, early in the morning, the earliest opportunity, I'm going. I'm going to do it. Now, again, I said this chapter really doesn't make sense to the natural man. See, to the natural man, let's say he's a noble man, okay? But, you know, he's natural. He's carnally minded. You know what the most important thing to the natural man is? It's family. It's family. And that's why these people are called Gentiles. It's from a word, gens, which means clan. It's the same word you see in things like genes or genetic or genesis or genealogy. It has to do with birth and family, okay? Gentiles are people that they're all about family. They're all about the nation and the culture, and that's the biggest thing to them. Well, what's their tradition say? What does our family do? Well, you know, that's where my religion comes from. That's where the politics comes from. That's what we do. That's our culture. That's just the way we operate. That's what Gentiles are. That's what they do. But God called Abraham out of them to not be a Gentile anymore and to say, no, Abraham, your family is not going to be the most important thing to you anymore. I'm going to be the most important thing to you now. Abraham is, it talks about in Romans chapter 2, being a Jew inwardly. Abraham is like, I know the word Jew comes from Judah, which is actually Abraham's grandson. Great-grandson. But in effect, God's calling Abraham out to be the first Jew. Okay? He's the father of the Jews. And his praise is not of men, it's of God. He's seeking to please the Lord. That's why this is his attitude. I'm going up early in the morning, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do it no matter how much it costs me, because God told me to. And that's the most important thing to me. So, he gets prepared, he takes Isaac, his son, he goes early in the morning, says verse 4, then on the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place afar off. This is both literal and figurative. So he's on the way. He sees the place where he's heading to. He sees it afar off. There's still a long way to go, but he's still going. And he says, verse 5, Abraham said unto his young men, abide ye here with the ass, and I and the lad will go yonder and worship and come again to you. Okay? So first thing is, what does he say he's going to do? I'm going to worship. This is the first place in the Bible where the word worship appears. What does the word worship mean? I know we talked about this a little bit a few weeks ago. That when you worship, the right response for a creature like us in relation to a holy God is we're going to bow down and get down on our face and just emphasize that God is up there and I'm down here and he's so much greater than me and it's all about him and it's not about me. And that's the emphasis. But what does the word worship really mean? It basically comes from worth-ship. It's about worth, okay? I'm not just making this up. This is literally the etymology of the word. Go to Revelation chapter 4.
Wow.
Worship is worth-ship. It means to ascribe worth or value. Revelation chapter 4. In verse 10, it says, "The 24 elders fall down before him that sat on the throne and worship him that liveth forever and ever, and cast their crowns before the throne, saying," what do they say when they worship? "Thou art worthy, O Lord, to receive glory and honor and power, for thou hast created all things, and for thy pleasure they are and were created." Good. That was Abraham's attitude toward God. That is why he did this. See, obedience is an act of worship. It's when you obey someone, you're saying, "You are worthy of my obedience." As a matter of fact, whenever you worship anything or anyone, that's what you're doing, is you're saying, "You're worthy of my time. You're worthy of my love. You're worthy of my effort. You're worthy of my obedience." And that's what Abraham's doing here. "I and the lad will go yonder and worship and come again to you." That's an interesting phrase there. "I and the lad will go yonder and worship and come again to you." Abraham's saying to these young men that he's leaving behind that both me and Isaac are going to come back to you. Okay, doesn't Abraham expect that he's going to go up on this mountain and kill his son? Yeah, that's fully what he was expecting to do. And yet he says they're going to come back, both of them. Talk more about that later. Verse 6. "And Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it upon Isaac his son. And he took the fire in his hand and a knife, and they went both of them together." So they got all the stuff that they need. They got the wood, the fire, the knife. And Isaac, you know, he's how old is he? I think it actually doesn't say how old he is here. But anyway, I mean, Isaac is obviously accustomed to going to sacrifices with his father. He recognizes that these different elements, they're part of a sacrifice. Hey, what are we going to do? Look at the stuff we got. We're going to make a sacrifice. But then he kind of scratches his head and he's like, "There's just one thing missing though, Dad." Verse 7, "Isaac spake unto Abraham his father and said, My father." He said, "Here am I, my son." And he said, "Behold the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for a burnt offering? Every time we've done this before, we've always had a lamb with us so we can have something to offer. But this time it's just my dad and all the stuff for a burnt offering and me. So what's going on, Dad?" And he asks a good question. And verse 8, "And Abraham said, My son, God will provide himself a lamb for a burnt offering." Now, I want to look at this week on the surface level, okay? Abraham is intending to go up on the mountain and kill his son. Okay? That's fully what he's intending to do. Isaac's trying to find out, hey, where's the lamb? What are we actually going to sacrifice here? And Abraham is trying to keep that information from him. Okay? I see this as kind of a pattern in Abraham's life. He gets into a tight spot, you know, and somebody asks him a question. Hey, who's that woman with you? She's my sister. He doesn't want to tell the whole truth. Okay? So you say, well, is Abraham being dishonest here? Yeah, maybe a little bit. But you know what? The Lord uses that. And the scripture uses that. And again, we're gonna look at that more next week. But he says, my son, God will provide himself a lamb for a burnt offering. So don't worry about it. Okay? I mean, what would you say in that situation? Would you say, yeah, son, I'm going to go up in this mountain and you're going to be the lamb. I'm going to kill you. Abraham didn't want to say that. It's very clear that he did not want to say that. Okay? So they went, both of them together. I want to highlight two things here about Isaac. Number one, he's completely innocent. He doesn't know what's going on. He has no idea. He asks his father. The other thing is, he trusts his father. Okay? Now, I don't know. I've known some pretty smart kids, you know, and sometimes they know more than you think they do. Imagine you're a kid, you're going up with your dad. Usually you have an animal with you, and there's no animal this time, and he's getting ready to make a sacrifice, and you're the only one there. It doesn't take a whole lot to put that together, unless you really trust your father. He really trusted his father. His father said, this is going to be okay. God will provide a lamb. He believes him. He trusts him. And they continue going. Never a doubt in his mind. Verse 9. So they come to the place. They came to the place which God had told him of. And Abraham built an altar there and laid the wood in order and bound Isaac his son and laid him on the altar upon the wood. I think at this point, Isaac's probably figured out what's going on. Verse 10, and Abraham stretched forth his hand and took the knife to slay his son. Abraham isn't bluffing. He's about to go through with this. He takes the knife. He's ready to slay him. Why? Because he hates his son? No, because he loves the Lord more. Abraham, this is not something that Abraham wanted to do. Verse 11. And the angel of the Lord called unto him out of heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, here am I. And he said, lay not thine hand upon the lad, neither do thou anything unto him. Can you just imagine the relief of Abraham at that moment when God told him that? Because his son, in Abraham's eyes, his son is as good as dead. God told him, I got to keep the word of the Lord. I got to do what he told me. But he's like, yeah, he's dead. He's gone. But then he says, for now I know that thou fearest God, seeing thou hast not withheld thy son, thine only son from me. And again, this is the test. This is when the test is revealed. So what actually happens here? Well, his son, who was as good as dead, now he's actually redeemed from death. How does it happen? Well, verse 13, and Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him a ram caught in a thicket by his horns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered him up for a burnt offering in the stead of his son. So verse 13, I mean, Abraham, when he said to Isaac, God will provide himself a lamb. I don't know if Abraham even really believed that himself. I don't know if he did. But that's a prophecy. Look, Abraham was full of the Spirit of the Lord. And it happens in John chapter 11. There's a man named Caiaphas, and he was the high priest. And he ends up speaking something that he meant one way, and yet the Lord used him because he was the high priest to give a prophecy that was like way above this guy's understanding. He had no idea what he was really saying by the Spirit of the Lord. And I think that's kind of what was happening there with Abraham. that he didn't mean to give this prophecy, but the Lord was doing it anyway. And what you see here is something that happens a lot of times with prophecy in the Bible, is that there's a near-term fulfillment, but actually it's not the real thing. There's actually a much greater fulfillment that's going to come later on. This happens many times in the Bible. So again, Abraham said, "My son, God will provide himself a lamb." Well, God did provide something here, but actually it's not a lamb. It's a ram. And there's a difference. So he's showing you there's a fulfillment here. God does provide right here in the stead of his son. But there's actually a greater fulfillment to that that's going to come. We're going to talk about that next week. So, verse 14, "And Abraham called the name of that place Jehovah Jireh. As it is said to this day, in the mount of the Lord it shall be seen." I talked a little bit about verse 4. It says that on the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place afar off. There's something that Abraham saw here in this mountain. And it wasn't just a literal thing going on in this mountain. He saw something afar off in history. Something that God was revealing to him at this point about the gospel. There's more that he saw here, is what I'm saying, than what's actually written here in this story. But about the name of the place, Jehovah Jireh. So Jehovah is the name of the Lord. And the Jireh, it means, the whole phrase, it means the Lord will see or provide. Why is this name given? It's Hebrew. Well, it has a meaning in Hebrew. This name in Hebrew, like I just said, the Lord will see or provide. And so what's the connection between see and provide? It's kind of like in English, if let's say there's a need, okay? Like, you know, maybe so-and-so needs money for something, okay? I don't know, a car, whatever. And I say, "I'll see to that." That's the connection. I'm not just observing it. Oh, okay, well, I guess that's what it is. No, it's I'm seeing it with a vision that I'm going to be the one to provide for that need. I'm not observing it passively. I'm observing it knowing that I'm going to provide for that need. I'm going to see to that. And that's basically the lesson here and why Abraham is calling it that name. The Lord will see. The Lord will provide. Verse 15, "And the angel of the Lord called unto Abraham out of heaven the second time and said, By myself have I sworn, saith the Lord, for because thou hast done this thing and hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, that in blessing I will bless thee, and in multiplying I will multiply thy seed as the stars of the heaven and as the sand which is upon the seashore, and thy seed shall possess the gate of his enemies. And in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, because thou hast obeyed my voice." Let's go to Hebrews chapter 6. Where this is talked about. Hebrews chapter 6. Hebrews chapter 6, and starting in verse 11. It says, "And we desire that every one of you do show the same diligence to the full assurance of hope unto the end." Okay, there's a key lesson in there for us, by the way. The full assurance of hope. If you want the full assurance of hope, then show the same diligence that Abraham did. That's the lesson here. When God gives you the next step, take the next step. Because God is trying to perfect you. He's trying to bring you along a spiritual journey that's according to His will. If you want the full assurance of hope, show the same diligence that Abraham did. Amen?
Amen.
Verse 12, that ye be not slothful, but followers of them who through faith and patience inherit the promises. That's what I just said. Be like Abraham. Be a follower of them who through faith and patience inherit the promises. For when God made promise to Abraham, because he could swear by no greater, he swore by himself, saying, surely blessing I will bless thee, and multiplying I will multiply thee. And so after he had patiently endured, he obtained the promise. For men verily swear by the greater, and an oath for confirmation is to them an end of all strife. Wherein God, willing more abundantly to show unto the heirs of promise the immutability of his counsel, confirmed it by an oath. Okay? God made these promises to Abraham already. Now what's he doing? He wants to take it up a notch. And he says, you know what men do? They swear by the greater. Well, God didn't have anyone greater to swear by. There's no one greater than him. So what does he do? He swears by himself. What does that actually mean? I think it's kind of like he says in Deuteronomy. I lift up my hand to heaven and say, I live forever. He's the eternal God. Amen. There's nothing greater you can swear by. And he does that because he just wants to make it crystal clear the immutability of his counsel. This is my will. This is my promise. I'm doing it. There's nothing that can change it. I swear by myself. All right. So let's just go back to Genesis 22. We got a few minutes left. Verse 19. Again, Abraham told the young men that they would return. And guess what? They returned. So Abraham returned unto his young men, and they rose up and went together to Beersheba, and Abraham dwelt at Beersheba. Let me go back to Hebrews 11, actually. I'm just going to read a few verses there. Again, Abraham, you know, when he talked to those young men, he said, I'm going up on this mountain with my son. We're going to worship, and both of us are coming back. Well, Abraham expected to go up there and kill his son. What do you mean he expected to come back? Hebrews 11, verse 17. By faith, Abraham, when he was tried, offered up Isaac. And he that, notice it said he offered him up. You say, well, he didn't actually offer him up. No, him going to that mountain with Isaac and taking the knife, yeah, he offered him up. He didn't actually get to the point of sacrificing him and killing him, but he did offer him up. He offered up Isaac, and he that had received the promises offered up his only begotten son, of whom it was said that in Isaac shall thy seed be called. He understood. Isaac was everything that God promised to me. It's all going to be through him. And you know what? I'll even give that up if God says, give it up. Verse 19, accounting that God was able to raise him up even from the dead, from whence also he received him in a figure. As I said, Abraham is thinking, I'm going to kill my son. He's as good as dead. But you know what? I'm going to come back with him. You know why? Because God promised me these blessings through Isaac, my son. And if God's going to keep his word and he wants me to kill Isaac, then God must be planning on raising him from the dead.
Right.
So he went with the full confidence. I'm going to go kill my son, but God's going to raise him up. And we're going to, both of us, come back to you guys. And that's what happened. And God didn't actually raise Isaac from the dead here. But it says he received him back from the dead in a figure. Why? Because he already expected that he was going to die. But he came back. He was redeemed. All right, so just a few verses left. Verse 20, it came to pass after these things that it was told Abraham, saying, Behold, Milcah, she hath also borne children unto thy brother Nahor, Huzzah's firstborn, Buz's brother, and Kemuel, the father of Aram, and Kesed, and Hazo, and Pildash, and Jidlaf, and Bethuel. And Bethuel begat Rebekah. And that's just giving some background. This chapter was about Abraham and Isaac. A couple chapters later, it's going to be time for Isaac to get married, and he's just giving some background on the family that Isaac's wife is going to come from. She is the Rebekah that's mentioned here. So I'm just going to stop there again. There are many layers to this chapter, and I just tried to touch on the first layer today. So we're actually going to go through this chapter again next week and dive in deeper to it. So I just want to thank you all for being in Sunday school, and happy Sunday.